On Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis, we had a list of 11 sfeikas with regard to whether or not there was haknas kefel, and the Gemara ends up with a teiku. The Rif writes that in all these sfeiks, in all these sfeikos, that we have a teiku is momen amutol b'sfeik cholkim. We split it, which would mean that the kefil be split between the mafkid and the nifkad. The Rush asks, that makes sense according to Sumchus, who maintains in Shoshanoga Sapora that moment amutal b'safek cholkim. But according to the Chachamim, hamotzi mechavero olav haraya, and he asks, what about the Cheskes Marakama, for example? We know that this shar belonged to the mafkid. Now the nifkad wants to claim ownership on the shar, on the para. So we should say ukme para becheskes bale becheskes marakama, and therefore the para belongs to the mafkid, and of course the kefel of this para belongs to the mafkid, unless we can prove otherwise. The Rambam in Hilchos Sheila Pikad and Perek Ches paskins like the Rif yachloku. And he explains, Hare a kefel mutol besofeg v'eino tachas yad echad mihen. Which means that as far as the kefel is concerned, it's a separate entity of mamon, and no one's muchzak on it. When did the Chachamim say, Amotzi mechal v'haraya? That's when you have mamon that's muchzak, b'yad echad mihen. But here there's no chazaka. So when the Rush asks the question about Yachloku here, how could it be Yachloku that Sumchus and not Chachamim? The Rambam gives and addresses this question head on, and he establishes that when there's no Chazaka, then the principle of the Chachamim of Hamotzi Mechal V'haraya is inapplicable. But we still have the second question of the Rush, and that is, what about the Cheskes Marakama of the Mafkid over the Para? And the Rambam doesn't seem to address that question. The Achronim suggest that the Rambam here is consistent with his opinion in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Chof. And there, the Rambam holds that in Shema V'Shema, we don't fall back on the Cheskes Marakama. And here, that we have a Teku, that becomes a Shema V'Shema. Since the suffix is Bedina, nobody could claim, neither the Mafkid or the Nifka, that he owns the Kefel. Alternatively, some of the later Achronim explain that when you have a Sufik Bedina, then you don't apply Chazaka. Chazaka is meaningful when you can be Machria, what exactly happened based on the Chazaka. So the Cheskes Marakama will tell you that such and such happened. For example, that the so-called Lokeach who claims that he purchased the object never actually purchased it. That's what Achras, Achazaka could accomplish. But in the case of a Safik Din, no Chazaka is meaningful to be Machriya the Safik, because the Safik remains a Safik in Din. Of course, you could always argue that in the case of Chazaka, there are two dimensions. There's not only Chazaka to be Machriya the Safik, but there's Chazaka that says status quo. And from that perspective, the Para belongs to the Mafkid. He has the Cheskes Marakama, you'll tell me, but it's a Sufik Bedina. Okay, go prove that the Din is in favor of the Shomer in order to take away the Para from the Cheskes Marakama of the Mafkid. But Rameir Simcha in the Or Samech wants to suggest that the Rambam holds that the Shomer never made a kinyan on the Para itself. The Akna was only on the Kefel. And therefore, there's no diun here on the para itself. If the ganav is found, is located, the para, if it's alive and well, if it's still intact, will be returned to the mafkid in any event. And that's regardless of the suffix. The question is only on the kefel. And with regard to the kefel, there's no cheskes marakama. Because the kefel, there was a separate akna on the kefel itself. That's the Rambam shita. Amongst the many sfeikas that the Gemara presented, one of them catches our fancy, and that is Sha'al Min HaShutfim. The Para was owned by two partners. And the Shoel went ahead and he paid one of the two partners. Is he Kona at least Chatzi Kefel? And Rabbi Kivager is upset about this because what do we say? That vis-a-vis that one partner that he paid, there was a full payment. And therefore he's Kona Chatzi Kefel. How could that be so? Even vis-a-vis one of the two Shutfim who owned this para, there's only a payment of Mechza. Because the halach of Shutfim is, and that's the definition of Shutfis, is that anything that's being paid belongs to the Shutfis as an entity. So even if, let's say, Levi paid Reuven his half of the value of the para, that itself, that payment itself is owned by both Shutfim equally. The payment is not going to go into the bank account of Reuven as if it were half. It's going to be paid for both Reuven and Shimon insofar as they're both Shutfim. And Rabbi Kivager offers an interesting answer. He says that once the Paro was stolen, at that point the Shutfis is completely broken down. In other words, we convert the Shutfis into ownership on the Domim, on the Dmea Paro, not on the Paro itself. If the Shoel was paying for the Paro, then El Chinami, any payment would be equally divided amongst the Shutfim. But now that the Paro is stolen and the Shutfis is null and void, now what each Shutif owns is the right to claim Tashlumin for that Paro from the Shomer. And each one, Reuven and Shimon, has his own individual claim to that part of the value of the Paro. One of the Sfeikas we had towards the end of the list was Shal Mina Isha Vashilem Labaila Mai. What happened was the Para is owned by the Isha, and the Shoel went ahead after he couldn't return the Para and he paid the Baal. And the question is, since the Baal is not the real owner of this Para, he may have rights through Ksuba to the Peros, but he doesn't own the Para itself. Therefore, we would say that he, the Baal, does not have the ability to be Machne Kefel. Or should we say that the Baal has some sort of special status over the Nechasim of his wife? Rashi explains that this Parah is Nichse Malug, which means amongst the Nechasim that she brought into the marriage, which have the status of Keren Shalov HaPeres LaBaal. She owns the Keren, meaning the Gufa Para, the Baal has rights to the Peros. And in this case, the Shomer paid for the Para to the Baal. Do we say that since the Keren doesn't belong to the Baal, that's not considered Tashlumin to the owner of the Para, and therefore the Baal doesn't have the rights, he's not in the driver's seat, to be Machne the Kefel. So Tosus asks a question on this, and he says that Kishashol HaPara Me'isha, once this person borrowed this para from the wife, it's as if he took the peros from the Baal. Meaning, this para has both guf and peros. And the one who borrows this para, the Shoel, he's borrowing the peros from the Baal. And therefore, when he pays for the para to the Baal, it's as if he paid for the Keren to the Isha and for the Peres to the Baal. So why shouldn't there be a possibility of Haknas HaKefel? We're going to begin, Emir Tzachem, the new sugi after Teku. We learned in the Mishnah that if the Shomer opts to pay, and he doesn't want to take a Shvua, they find the Ganav, he, the Shomer, collects Kefel. Omar Avhuna, we think that Pashtus of the Mishnah is that the Shomer opt to pay, and therefore he's completely alleviated from any Chiyuv Shvua. Says Rav Huna, that's not so. Mashbiyin also Shvua She'ena Bershuso. There is one Shvua that we can single out that the Shomer certainly has to take, and that is Eina Bershuso, that the par is not in his Rishus. Meaning he doesn't have it hidden away somewhere. My taima, why is that shvua necessary? Chayshina and Shema, ain of nosan ba. The reason why the Torah imposes this Shvuah of Einav Rishuso is because of the fear, the suspicion that perhaps the Shomer decided he loves this object, he wants it for his own, and therefore he stashed it away. He's willing to pay for it, but he's not paying for it because it was stolen, he's paying for it because he stole it. And in order to undermine that chashash and nullify that suspicion, we have to require that the Shomer take a Shvuah. Meisve, the Gemara Sakasha from a Mishnah in Shvuos, Daf Mem Gimel, Hamalve Eschavero Ala Mashkon V'Overa Mashkon. Now let's understand that if a Malve lends money and he takes a collateral, that Mashkon, we're not sure whether that Mashkon is worth less than the Halva, more than the Halva, or exactly the same as the halva. In this case that the Mishnah addresses, the mashkon was lost. And now in this case, if we assume that the mashkon is worth more than the halva itself, more than the money that he extended as a loan, then the malva would have to pay the difference. So let's say, for example, the halva was 4 dinrim. And the mashkon was worth 5 dinrim, the malv would have to pay that extra dinar. If on the other hand the mashkon was worth 3 dinrim, then the lova would have to make up the difference and pay 1 dinar. Or alternatively, the malv, instead of collecting 4 dinrim, will only collect 3 out of the 4 dinrim. And that's how the lova repays him for the differential between the halva and the mashkon. The Mishnah establishes 4 dinim, 2 of them in which the malve is tovea, he claims as the plaintiff that the lova owes him money because the mashkan is worth less than the halva, and in two cases out of the 4, it's the lova who's the plaintiff. He's suing the malve because the mashkan is worth, in his claim, more than the halva. Now, what we have here is the following principle as far as Shvuah is concerned. If there's a kofra kol situation, then you're potter from Shvuah. If there's a modem miksas situation, then you're chayav a Shvuah. So in the light of that introduction, let's go through the 4 cases of the Mishnah, and then we're going to swing back to ask a kasha on Rav Huna of Shvuah she'eina b'rishuso. Case number 1. Here the malve is suing the lova. The Omar Lo, he says to the Lova, Sela, which is the equivalent of Shnei Shkolim, Hilvi Sicholov, Vishekel Hoyeshove. The amount of money that I lent you is only 1 shekel, which is half of a Sela, and the Mashkin itself, sorry, the Malva's claim is Sela Hilvi Sicha, I lent you 2 shkolim. And v'shekel hayashav, the mashkin was only worth 1 shekel. So if the sela is equivalent to 2 shkolim, and the mashkin is only worth 1 shekel, then you, Mr. Lova, owe me the differential, which is 1 shekel. V'hala, Omer, the Lova contends, lo, that's not what happened? Ki ela sela hilvisani olav v'sela hayeshove. That the mashkon is not worth a chatzi sela, but a full sela, the exact amount, the value of the matmos of the halva. In this case, potur, the lova doesn't have to pay because he's a kofra kol. He doesn't admit that in this situation he owes anything, because from the lova's perspective, the mashkin is worth alva. If the mashkin is gone, then he doesn't have to pay the alva. He's completely potter. As we move on to case number 2, please keep in mind that the shekel is worth half of a sela. In other words, the sela is worth 2 shkolim. And the shekel itself is worth 2 dinrim. So a sela has 4 dinrim. Now we have a case where the malva again is claiming he's suing the Lova, but here's a case where the Lova admits partially it's a modu mixa situation. Sela helvisicha, I lent you a seller which is two shkolim or four dinrim, v'shekel ha'yeshav, and the mashkan was only worth 50%, it was only worth half of a sela or two dinrim. V'alo omer, and the lova says, lo kiel a sela hilvisani alov, shlosha dinrim ha'yeshav. The sela, which is equivalent to shnei shkolim or four dinrim, was the amount of halva, that I admit. But says the Lova, the mashkon that you, Mr. Malva, took was worth three dinarim, which means that it's one dinar minus. The differential here is that the mashkon, even according to the Lova, is worth one dinar less than the mashkon. The Malva, on the other hand, is claiming that the mashkon was only worth a sela, which is the mashkon was only worth a shekel, which is half of a sela, and that's two dinarim. So the machlokas here now between the malv and the lova is over that third dinar. So the malv is basically claiming from the lova two dinarim. The lova denies one of those two dinarim and admits to the other dinar. Chayev, in this case, the lova has to take a shvua of modu v'miksas. Now we switch over to the other half of the court. And now it's the Lova who's suing the Malva. Sela hilvisani olav. You gave me a alva of a sela, but the mashkon is shnayim hayeshava. The mashkon was only worth... No, here shnayim means shnayim, not shnei dinri, but shnei sloyim. So the mashkon was worth double... According to the claim of the Lova, double the amount of the Alva. And therefore, you, Mr. Malva, owe me the differential insofar as you lost my mashkon, you owe me a sela. Vala Omer, what's the counter argument, the claim of the Malva? Loki, el sela hilvisicha olav, visela hayeshava. The mashkon was not worth a penny more than the halva. And therefore, the Malva says, I don't owe you anything. Potter, the Malva is a kofra kol, he doesn't take a shvua. Then the fourth case is where the Malva is going to be a modu b'miktsas. Sela hilvisani olav. Shnayim hayeshava. The Lova's claim is that the mashkon was worth two sloim, and therefore... The Malva, since he lost the mashkin, has to pay the differential between the alva of one shekel and the value of the mashkin, which is two sloim. So the Lova is claiming a sela, v'alo omer, but the Malva contends, lo ki el sela v'sichalav v'chamisha dinrim hayeshava. The mashkon was worth five dinrim, which is the equivalent of a sela and a quarter. That was the worth of the mashkon, which means that if the halva was four dinrim and the mashkon, according to the claim of the malva, was five dinrim, the malva admits to owe one dinar. Is chayev. In that case, the malva has to take a shvuas modu v'miktsas because the Lova is claiming that the Malva owes him four dinrim, and the Malva admits that he owes one out of those four dinrim. That's called modu v'miktsas. Now the Mishnah concludes by asking the following question: Mi nishma? In other words, in those cases of modu v'miktsas, who takes the shvua? Now again, we have two out of the four of the cases where there's a chiyuv shvua. We have the case where the Lova was modu b'miktsas, and now we have the case where the Malva was modu b'miktsas. Who takes the shvua? Well, we would have assumed that in the first case that the Lova was modu b'miktsas, the Lova takes the shvua. In the second case where the Malva was modu b'miktsas, the Malva takes the shvua. But to our surprise, the Mishnah says Misha Pikadon Etzlo. Whoever was holding on to this mashkon, meaning the shomer and the mashkon, that's the malva. The malva himself is possessing the mashkon. And why should the malva take the shvua? Meaning, if the malva was the mode of a mikzas in case number 4 in the Mishnah, okay, forget about giving any explanations. For sure, Misha Pikad Netzel, the malva has to take the shvua. He was the mode of a mikzas. In the second case of the 4 cases in the Mishnah, the lov is the mode of a mikzas, and therefore the lov has to take the shvua. And it would seem, and so the Gemara is going to develop this, I'm just giving you a preview of coming attractions, that the Mishnah is establishing that even in the second case of the 4 cases of the Mishnah, where the lova is the mode of a mikzas, even so, it's the shomer, who's the malva, who's going to take the shvua, which makes it into a shvua as nishpav and notel. And on that, the Mishnah asks, why? Sheva yishava zev yotzi halah es hapikadon. We're worried about the fact that the malva might have actually possession of the pikadon, and when after the lova takes his shvua, that the pikadon is worth a sela. Let's just get the second case. Sela hel visich v'alo omer lo ki el sela visani ushlosha dinim hayishava. Right, the contrary, that the pikadon was worth less than the halva. Correct, 1 dinar. In that case, he was mode of a mikzas, that he has to pay 1 dinar, not like the malva's claim that he owes him 2 dinarim because the mashkin was only worth a shekel, which is 2 dinarim. Then, if the lover goes ahead and takes the shvua to the effect that the mashkin is worth 3 dinarim, the malva could pull out the mashkon, and lo and behold, it's worth only 2 dinarim. It's only worth a shekel, as the malva claimed. As a result, the lova becomes posel henceforth for taking a shvuas shav. It's posel even for eidus. So this understanding of the Mishnah that we presented is based on Rashi, Dibra Maschil, Tepukle. However, Tosvis, Dibra Maschil Sheva, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, says, I don't understand. Rabbeinu Tam objects to Rashi's pshat. He says that, what are you doing? They're shifting the shvuas mode of mixus of the lova onto the malva and making it into a shvuas nishpa menotel. He says, let the lova take the shvua. Ah, you're worried about the fact that maybe the malva has the mashkon stashed away. That's going to strengthen the fear and the inhibitions of the lova for taking the shvua. We're going to, in a sense, add another extra factor, another extra reason why the lova is going to be very careful and be absolutely certain that he, in fact, identifies with certainty the value of the mashkon, because maybe the malva will pull out the mashkon and show him to be a ramai and a shvua sheker. And not only that, says Rabbeinu Tam, according to Rashi's pshat, this takana to shift like a ping pong ball the chiv shvua from the lova onto the malva, put it in his court, that's all based on what we call a takanas ramayim, that we're afraid that the malva might be a ramai. He really has the mashkon stashed away, even though he's claiming that the mashkon was lost and it no longer exists. Of an amashkon, that's his claim, he really has it stashed away somewhere. So because of the takonis ramoim, we're going to switch the shvua from one side to the other. Now, it could be that maybe it's not ramos in the full sense. Maybe the mashkon was in some way damaged, but there's a mistake in terms of how to evaluate the mashkon, and therefore when the lova took the shvua that it's worth as much as 3 dinarim, maybe he was mistaken in the evaluation of the mashkon. But what are you telling me? Now the mashkon is in the hands of the malva. The malva is going to take the mashkon and present it to Beis Din in order to be motzi laz on the lova, that he, the lova, took a shvua sheker. even though in fact the Lova took a Shavuos Emes. Because in the Lova's understanding, before the Kilkel HaMashkon, it was worth as much as 3 dinarim. But Rabbeinu Tam objects to that based on the Gemara Lahalon, on Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph. We didn't get to this Gemara yet. The Gemara is going to say, Ki Mishtaba Malve, even after the Malve takes the Shvua, Nami Litrach Love, the Lese, that maybe the Lova will make a tremendous effort to locate the Ganov, if like who was stolen, or to locate the lost Mashkon, in order to prove his claim as to the value of the Mashkon. In other words, even now, when the Shvua is being taken by the Malva, the Lova could still do that Tircha, bring the Mashkon, bring the Pikadim back. But on the contrary, according to Rashi's logic, what is the Gemara arguing here? Because if the Lova is going to do that, then the Malva should be Medagdik B'Shvua, and he should take a Shvua's Emes. So this whole concept of Ramos here seems to be out of place. Rabbeinu Tam quotes Rabbeinu Chananel as an alternative shot in the Gemara, and the chash is because a Dover Shanira, when we have something that could be seen, and we could obviously prove whether the Shvua is accurate or not accurate, that becomes like Nirik Shvua Levatola. It looks like a wasted Shvua. It's a Gnai to Bezdin to be Mashbia, a Shvua, when we can clarify that which is the subject of that Shvua. And that's why, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, the Chachamim established that this Shvua should be taken by the Malve. He definitely will not take the Shvua until he knows for sure that it's impossible to find and locate the Mashkon. It's been lost and it cannot be found. So in a word, there's a Machlokas Rashi in Tosfos, which is also Rashi versus Rabbeinu Chananel, as to what the motivating factor here in this Takanas Chachamim, is it Ramos, or is it the fact that this Shvua is in a certain sense unnecessary? It becomes a Shvua of Atola insofar as we locate the Mashkon, we can put it on the table of Bezdin, you know, evidence number one, and we can determine exactly its value. Why do we impose a Shvua to determine the value of the Mashkon? The Gemara now goes through an analysis of the last explanation of the Mishnah, that who takes the Shvua, the one who's holding on to the Pikado, meaning the Malva. Hey, what's it going on? Elam, if you'll tell me, I'm safe on the last of the 4 cases in which the Malva himself was Modem Miktas, and therefore he has to take the Shvuas, Tepeklei the Shvua, Gabi Malvi, the Shvua is the Shvuas Modem Miktas. Dokomodi. So why do you need to explain that the Chachamim established this Shvua because of Shema Yishav Ezeva Hot V'Yotzi Allah Es HaPikonon? There was never a Chiv Shvua on the Lova to begin with, that we have to transfer from the Lova to the Malva. Elomar Shmuel Aresha, we're going back to the beginning of the Mishnah, the case where the Lova was Modem Miktas. What does it mean, Maya Aresha? In the first case in the Mishnah, the Lova is claiming that he's potter, so there was no Shvua to begin with. But I say for the Reish, but rather the second of the 4 cases, in which the Malva is claiming Sela Hilvi Sichal of Shekel HaYeshaveh, the Malva is claiming that the Mashkon was only worth less, I mean, less meaning less than what the Lova is willing to admit, it's only worth half of the Halva, that's 2 dinrim, or a shekel, which is half of a sela. And therefore, you, Mr. Lova, have to pay me 2 dinrim. V'ala, Omer, the Lova says, Lo ki elas elavi salilav shlosha dinrim ayishaveh. In this case, the Lova admits that he owes 1 dinar, because the discrepancy between the Mashkon and the Halva was 1 dinar, is chayov. And in such a case, the Shvua Gabi Lovehu, the Malv is being Tovea, he's the plaintiff suing the Love for 2 dinrim. The Love admits to 1 dinar, denies the other. has to take the shvuah of modu b'miktzas because he admits that he owes the malve a selah because a dinner because the mashka was worth one dinar less than the halva. So he has to make up that differential, but the Rabbanan shifted the Shavua from the Lova to the Malva, and the Takanas Chacham was made that even though the Lova Mikra Din, according to the Torah law, is Chayav Shavua, nevertheless we're going to shift it over to the Malva. Why? And the answer is, Shema, the Chacham were afraid, Yishova Zeh, the Lova will take the Shavua, V'yotzi Allah Asapikodon, and then the Malva will produce the Pikadon, which he claims was lost, but now it was found. And as a result, and again we're going here with the Pshat of Rashi right now, the Lova, because he took this false oath, will become possible for Eidus and Shavua. And that's something that, of course, we want to avoid at all costs. Now we swing back to Rav Huna. If you remember, Rav Huna said that a Shomer who claims that the object that he took for Shmir was lost has to take a shvua she'ena b'shusa. So the Gemara asks now, and here we're starting Lamed Hei Yomid Aleph, v'yam isa, if you accept Rav Huna's premise, l'ra Rav Huna, then kevan de'mishtab ha'malve she'ena b'shusa. So the malve is claiming that the mashkin was lost, he's going to have to take a shvua according to Rav Huna she'ena b'shusa. Is hechi motzi mafikli? What are you telling me? That the malve is going to, you're afraid, will take and produce the mashkon, if he produces the mashkon, he himself incriminates himself by virtue of the fact that he took a false shvua. So it doesn't make sense that we should suspect the possibility that the malva is going to produce the mashkon if he took a shvua sheinu b'shuso. And here we have three different answers to this question to try to reconcile Rav Huna's shvua sheinu b'shuso with the Mishnah that's afraid that the malva will produce the mashkon. We start with Rava, and of course we're going to need Rav Yosef here to embellish Rava. Omar Rava, Rava says, Sheyesh Edim Shenisrafa. The case is that there are two witnesses that testify to the effect that this object that was given, this mashkin that was given over to the Malva, went up in flames, went up in smoke. Now, if that be the case, then there's no need, says Rava, no requirement to impose a shvua on the malve, ain't a b'shuso. He has Eidim to testify ain't a b'shuso. But the Gemara asks the obvious question, if that's the case, then why are you worried about the fact that the malve is going to produce the mashkon? Eidim testified the mashkon went up in smoke. Ritva points out here that we could rely on the Eidim in order to alleviate the malve of a shvua sheinu b'shusa, but we're not absolutely certain that the Eidus of the malve is on that object. For example, the Eidim recognized the object as that which the lova owned and gave as the mashkin based on a certain simon. Let's say it was a garment, and they recognized the, based on the simonim, the distinguishing marks of this beged, that this was the beged that was given to the malve as a mashkon, and we saw it go up in smoke. We still have to be choshesh. Perhaps the Eidim, not chas v'shalom perjuring themselves, but they made a mistake, and that was not the beggar that was given up, that was given over by the lova to the malva as a mashkon, and the mashkon, the malva might produce the mashkon after the lova took the shvua. But apparently the Gemara's question is the following, says the Ritva. If we rely on the Eidim to alleviate the malve from his chiyuv shvua v'ena b'shuso, it means that we're relying on the Eidim to believe that they accurately identify the object, and we can rely on the Eidim, therefore, that the malve will not be able to produce the chefza, the pikadon. So if that be the case, the whole point of the Mishnah of shifting the shvua from the lova to the malve makes no sense. El Amar Rav Yosef, to understand Rava, we're going to have to say Sheyesh Eidim Shenignava, that the Eidim testified that the object was stolen, and that's why the Malva is alleviated from his Shvuah Veda Bershuso. And again, the Gemara is going to ask, well, what do you worry about now? If the Eidim testified that the object was stolen, Sof sof mehecha maisele. Why do you suspect that the malva is going to produce, if the lover takes his shvua motive mixes, the malva will subsequently produce this object and show the lover to be a liar who perjured himself in the oath, the false oath? The Gemara answers, ditarechu maisele. After the object was stolen, the malva is going to work very hard to bring the thief to justice. He's going to track down the ganav, and the reason for that is because he's going to ask around amongst the people who came into his house, you know, like, where were you? He's going to suspect them, because the malva again has the pikadon, he has the mashkon in his house. He knows who came into his house and who does not come into the house. And therefore the malva is going to make a tremendous effort to locate the ganav and prove that the lova shvu is a shvu sheker, that indeed this mashkin is only worth a shekel, is only worth 2 dinarim, and not as the lova swore, 3 dinarim. Ihachi, says the Gemara, you're worried about the malva tracking down the thief. Is ki mishtaba malva nami litrech lova velese. Even after you've imposed the shvua on the malva, the lova might indeed go out and find the ganav, and then he's going to prove that the malva took a false oath. Our answer is bishlema malva yodaman ka'ayil v'nofik bebeise. The malva is aware of who comes up to his house and goes out of his house. V'ozel v'tarchu ma'isila. Therefore, he'll put out this extra effort to figure out which of the suspects who come into his house, his workers, whatever it might be, would have possibly stolen the object. He's going to be able to track down the thief. The lova has no idea who to suspect. He's starting from zero. He doesn't know who comes into the house of the malva. The malva is the one who's possessing the mashkot. And therefore, we have no reason to suspect that if the malva takes the shvua, the lova is going to disprove his shvua, show him up as a liar by producing the object and digging up and tracking down the thief. That's the pshat of Rav Yosef, which again is a different version, so to speak, a different twist on Rava. Keep in mind, when the Gemara assumes that the lova in the kasha will make an effort to track down the thief, it doesn't mean, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, that he's trying to show up the malva and prove that he's posel shvua and liedus, but rather it means that the lova is motivated to track down the thief in order to exempt himself from the shvua. He's going to prove that his claim that the mashkon is worth more than a shekel, it's more an extra dinar's worth, is a true claim. Abaye Omer. Abaye has another way of reconciling the Mishnah with Rav Huna of Shvua Sheina B'Shu. So it's not that the Edom came to testify that the Pikada went up in smoke or was stolen, but the Malva has to take a Shvua Sheina B'Shu, and nevertheless the Chachamim wanted to shift the Shvua as to the claim of the Halva versus the Mashkon, those two values, over to the Lova. Gzera Shema Yit'on, the Malva may claim, V'yomer Lo, he's going to say to the Lova, Achar Shvua Mitzasiha, I took my Shvua Sheina B'Shuso, and then I found the object. And at the time that I took the Shvua, I didn't know that it was in my Rishus, and now the Malva is going to show up the Lova. Again, according to Rashi, what we're saying is there's a chash that the malva is going to do this for miskavin. He wants to passel up the lova and show him up as a liar. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, the chash is not that we're worried about the malva being so vindictive and so malicious that he wants to show up the lova as a liar, but rather the chash is that there'll be a shvul of atola. Now, if the malva already took the shvua of Eina B'Shuso, we can assume that he won't find the object subsequently. So what is the point here of Abaye, according to Rabbeinu Hananel's interpretation, the Yomer Lo Achar Shvua Mitzasiya? After all, he took the Shvua Shena Bershusi. Should we worry that he might find it? Why would he find it? Again, according to Rashi, there's a strong motivation for him to find it. So the Pnei Yeshua writes that if he's only going to take a Shvua Shena Bershusi, we're not going to fear, we're not going to suspect that he's going to look and search with great effort, because even if he finds the object, the pikadon, there's no shvua sheker. He thought at the time that he took the shvua that it was Einav Rishuso. But if, on the other hand, he has to take a shvua and be medagdeik, he's going to have to tell us exactly how much the pikadon was worth. In this case, he's claiming it's worth 2 dinarim. Is then he's going to be motivated to find it, because if he does find it subsequently, or if somebody finds it, there's going to be a laz on him. So he would rather be motivated, according to Rabbeinu Chananel's pshat, to search and seek out the object to make sure that he's protected from any possible laz, because he just took the shvua. And the shvua is not just any bershusi, but the shvua is going to be exactly how much the mashkin is worth. Rav Ashi, Omer Rav Ashi, gives a third approach and another answer to reconcile the Mishnah and Shavuos with Rav Huna. Zen nishba, v'zen nishba. Both the malv and the lov will take a shvua. They both are obligated to take a shvua, respectively. Ze, the malv takes a shvua, nishba sheinu bershuso. V'zen and the lov nishba kama hayashav. The lov is the one who's going to take a shvua to the effect that this mashka was worth 3 dinarim. So what did the Mishnah mean? The chachi kamar. What did the Mishnah mean when it indicated that there was some sort of takonas chachamim here? And what were the chachamim worried about? Is mi nishpat chila, the subject of this Mishnah, is who takes the shvua first? Malve nishpat chila, shem yishav azeh, v'yotzi, halah es hapikot. It's critical that the malva first take his shvua of eina b'shuso, and that's going to convince us that the object is gone, and we won't be able to show up the lova. Because again, if the lova were to take the shvua before the malva, then we have to be afraid that after the lova took a shvua to the effect that the pikadon is worth, the bashkin is worth 3 dinarim, the malva, who hasn't yet taken a shvua eina b'shusi, is going to produce the pikadon, put it down on the table, and prove that the lova was a shakran, and he perjured himself in this shvua. But if the malva will take his shvua first, of Eina Bershusi, Rav Huna's shvua, that will calm us down, and we don't have to suspect the malva will, after the lova takes his shvua to 3 dinarim, will produce the pikadon. You might ask, even without this din and this takana, perhaps the malva should take his shvua first in any event? And the answer is that this shvua of Eina Bershusi is not a shvua d'oraisa. That's Rav Huna's shvua d'rabbanon. The shvua, the lova, on the other hand, is a mode of miktsas, which is a shvua satorah. Bezdin should be makdim the shvua saloven, so far as it's d'oraisa. And that's what the Mishnah was telling us. No, we're going to establish that in this case, the shvua d'rabbanon of Eina Bershusi of the malva should take place first. The Gemara now asks an additional question, raises an additional obligation, objection to Rav Huna from a Mishnah. Rav Huna bar Tachlifa Mishmei Derav Amar Reisha De Seifa Tuvta LeRav Huna. In other words, let's look at this Mishnah again, but let's zoom in on the Reisha De Seifa. And again, keep in mind that in the Seifa, it is the Lova who is the plaintiff, and the Malva is Modav Miktas. And the question is as follows. Sela Hilvi Sani Olav Shtayim Hoya Shove. The Malva claims that the Mashkar was only worth Shtayim, and therefore the Lova has to pay Shtayim V'Alo Omer Loki Ela Sela V'Si Cholav Selahoya Shove. In this case, the Lova is claiming that I don't have to pay you anything because the mashkon was much more valuable than what you claim, Mr. Malva. The mashkon is equivalent in its value to the alva, and therefore one thing washes off the other. I don't have to pay you. Is the Mishnah says patur v'im iso l'Rav Huna migo de mishtama malva sheni bershuso l'shtaba nami agilgal shvua kama yeshove. Why, according to Rav Huna, is the malva off the hook over here? The malva, in any event, has to take a shvua she'ena bershusi, and once he takes that shvua, the lova has a right to be megalgil shvua, because one shvua, once is a chiyuv, you can demand another shvua, and the lova will demand that the malva take a shvua that the value of the mashka was so much lower, it was only worth 2 dinrim. That's called Gilgal Shvua. And this is based on a Gemara in Masechta Kiddushin. V'yansa v'yamra amen v'yamen in the parasha of Sota. Amen shalo satisi imploni, shalo satisi amoni. I didn't have znus with one man, I didn't have znus with another man. She suspected of one. And now we can expand it. That's Gilgal Shvua. And in this case, What's going to end up is that the malva is going to have to take a shvua to the effect that the mashkin is worth only 2 dinrim, only a shekel. And it would seem, therefore, that this mishnah is assuming not like Rav Huna. There never was a shvuas eino bershusi at a basis for a gilgal shvua. And that's why the malva doesn't take a shvua as to the value of the mashkin. Amar Rav Ashi, Amrisa, Lishmaita, Kameder Rav Huna, which means that I presented this sugya to Rav Huna, and this very question from the Resha of the Seifa. V'Amar Li, let me just reiterate the case here of the Resha of the Seifa one more time. I don't know if I said it correctly. The Lova is claiming that the mashkin is worth twice the halva. Instead of being worth one selah, which is the money of the halva, it was worth 2 selaim. And therefore the Lova is suing the malva to pay him up an extra selah to make up the difference. Whereas the malva is claiming, no, that the mashkin was worth only 1 selah, is worth the exact amount of the halva. And in this case, the malva is a kofra kol, and the Mishnah establishes that he's potter, and the lova cannot be mechayev him a shvua. But what about Gilgal Shvua Amar Rav Ashi? Amrisa lishmaita kameder of kahana v'yomar li shetehe bima amino. The Mishnah is talking about a case, again, this is a little bit dochuk, of ma'amino. And what's the ukimto of ma'amino? The lova believes the malva sheni bershuso, and therefore he exempts and alleviates the malva of the shvua veni bershuso. As a universal rule, the malva has to take a shvua sheni bershuso because he's the shomer, and we're afraid shema nosan einov ba. But in the case of ma'amino, which is the one single exception to the rule, when the malva or the shomer is alleviated from his shvua sheni bershusi because the lova trusts the malva in that sense, then there's no basis for a gilgal shvua. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute, if the lova trusts the malva, nehemni lova l'malva nami b'ha, kama v'shova, the lova is accusing the malva of downplaying the value of the mashkon, and instead of admitting to the truth that the mashkin is worth twice the halva, shnei shkolim, the malva, according to the suspicion of the lova, the accusation of the lova, is claiming that the mashkon is worth only 1 selah. And I only owe you 1 selah for the mashkon, and since you owe me a selah for the halva, I don't owe you a red cent. So then, how could it be? Where's the consistency? On the one hand, the lova believes the malva, when the malva says that the pikadon, the mashkin is lost. On the other hand, he suspects him of slashing the value of the mashkin by 1/2. And the Gemara answers, lo kimle bigave. The lova doesn't believe the malva as far as the value of the mashkin, because maybe the malva is not a bucky, he's not an expert in evaluations. You know, he's not a shamai who's professional job is to evaluate things. So the Malve innocently has slashed the value of the Mashkin by half. And not that in the mind of the Lover, the Malva is not a no good liar. I can trust him, for example, Einav Rishusi, for sure he's not going to lie to me on that and alleviate him from that Shvua. But I need a Shvua, says the Lover, on the value of the Mashka. Here I don't trust the Lover, the Malva, not because I think the Malva is a no good, thief, but because the Malva is not a buck, he doesn't really know. He's not aware of the accurate value of the Mashkin. That's something that I know and he doesn't know. But again, the Malva was a Kofar HaKol, claiming that he doesn't know the Lova dime, and therefore he doesn't have to take a Shvua. You'll tell me Gilgul Shvua. The answer is the Lova believes the Malva of Einav Rishusi. The Gemara asks, Vinehemne Malva la Lova, the Kimle Begaveh. If there's such a wonderful relationship here between the Malva and the Lova, a mutual trust, why doesn't the Malva trust the Lova that the Lova, as he claims, is the bucky, and he knows exactly how much it's worth, and the Mashkin, in the mind of the Malva, was devaluated by half? No. The true, accurate value of the Mashkin is, as the Lova claims, two shkolim. So the Gemara answers, Lo mehemin lei. This is not reciprocal. Although the Lova does trust the Malva doesn't really trust the Lova. And the Malva is absolutely convinced that this Mashkon is worth half of what the Lova claims it's worth. So the din in our Mishnah that the Malva is potur, because the Malva was a Kofra Kol, and he claims that the value of the Mashkin was exactly equivalent to the value of the loan, then the Malva, although he's believed by the Lova that Einav Rishusi, and that alleviates the Malva of his responsibilities, obligation to take a Shvu of Einav Rishusi, what's left here is a Kofra Kol situation. And if there's a Kofra Kol situation, there's no basis for a Gilgul Shvua. The Gemara says, "Umayshna Lova de Mehemin Le Lamalva, Umayshna Malva de Lo Mehemin Le Lova." This seems to be a relationship that's out of whack and out of balance. Why is it that the Lova believes the Malva, but the Malva doesn't trust the Lova? That's a little bit odd. Why would the Mishnah come up with a din and formulate the halacha in that particular scenario? And the Gemara answers, Lova Mekayim Bei B'Malva Tumas Yesharim Tanchem Malva Mekayim Bei B'Lova V'Selef Bogdim Yeshadem. Okay, the Gemara quotes here a pasuk in Mishle, and the pasuk in Mishle says, "Tumas Yesharim Tenachem," and what this means is that that Shlomo Melech in Mishle is speaking the praise, singing the praises of the Yesharim, those who are upright. And they have a certain tmimus, a certain tamus. It means that if you see a person who became wealthy, then you have to assume that this is a gift from the divine being, min hashamayim. And he must be an honest person. If not, why would Hashem be mezakeh him in this wealth? A malve is someone who has enough money to extend a serious loan to the Lova, in this case a Selah, that's a serious amount of money, a substantial amount of money. The Lova knows that the Malva is a trustworthy person. That's the way the Lova looks at the Malva. On the other hand, the Pasuk says, V'selef bogdim yishadim. Read to you the official translation of V'selef bogdim yishadim. The perverseness of traitors will plunder them. What basically this means, that a poor man who has to borrow money from someone, that's a person who is not trustworthy. He's bogdim, he's perverse. And therefore the Malva does not believe the Lova to claim that he, the Malva, owes a full selah because the Mashkin, as the Lova claims, is worth two sloim. And now the Gemara tells us a story with an incident that had a certain psak to it, a horah, with reference to our Mishnah, who gavra the afkid kife gabi chavre. He was mafkid nizomim, is the Hebrew translation of kipe, some sort of a ring, an earring. And then Omar Lay, the mafkid, says to the shomer, havli kipe, it's time for you to return my ring, my earring. Omar Lay, so the shomer responds, lo yadana hechosivna, I forgot where I placed it. It's temporarily misplaced. Also, lekameder of Nachman, the case came in front of Nachman, Omar Lay, kol lo yadana pshi usahi. If the shomer doesn't remember where he put the pikadon, that's not called, he's not exonerated, he's not guiltless, he is negligent. And that's called a pshia. He should have remembered where he placed it. Zil shalem. And therefore, the shomer has to pay for that. Even if he's a shomer chinam, it's irrelevant. Lo shilem. The story continues, and the shomer refused to pay. Ozal Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman took the law into his hands. Agbe la'afande mine. He took his afande, which in Lashon Kodesh is translated as traklin. In other words, he confiscated something of value from the shomer in lieu of the fact that the shomer owes the mafkid for this object that he didn't return because he claims that he didn't know where he put the earrings. Now, this word traklin in English is translated as a mansion. And we're talking about a home. He literally took away his home. L'sofish takach kipe v'aikur. At the end of the day, they were able to locate these earrings, but in the meantime, they went up in value. Omar Rav Nachman, hadre kipe l'marayhu. Let's first return the earrings to their rightful owner, to the mafkid. V'hodra afanda l'mara. And then, after we do so, we'll return the mansion to its owner, to the shomer. And Omar Rava Yasivna Kamei, the Rav Nachman, when Rav Nachman was actually judging this case, I happened to have been there, Upirkin HaMafkid Hava, and we were at that time studying Perik HaMafkid, the Amrile, and I asked Rav Nachman the following question regarding his psak. Doesn't the Mishnah say Shilem V'lo Rotza Lishova? If the Shomer would rather pay then take a shvua, and in this case the shomer paid, is therefore we should say that if later on we locate the earrings and they went up in price, then that appreciation belongs to the shomer, because once he went ahead and he paid up, then he becomes the rightful owner of the pikadon. That's the yisod that underlies our Mishnah. And if the pikadon therefore appreciates in value, that appreciation accrues to the shomer insofar as he's already paid up. So why did you say that we return the earrings back to the mafkid, to its original owner? Doesn't the mafkid have to give to the shomer the increment, the extra appreciation of its value? And Rava claims, Vlo Hadrili, Rav Nachman didn't even bother with my question, he didn't even pay any attention, he didn't even give me a response. And Rava says, V'shaper Ovid Lo Ahadri, it was good that he didn't answer, because my question is no question, my timer. Why is this case that we're dealing with the earrings, not at all comparable, analogous to our Mishnah, the Hosam Lo Atreche Lebedina? When do we say that the Mafkid is Makne, the object, to the Shomer? That's when it doesn't have to go through Bezdin. If they settle outside of court and the shomer spares the mafkid of all the hassles of court fees and the time and so forth and so on, then the mafkid is willing to be makneh
the kefel to be makna the object to the shomer who paid up for it. But hocha atshechele beidina, in the case that came in front of Rav Nachman, the makna, the mafkid is not going to be makna the shomer, the pikadon itself, even though the shomer did pay in effect. Why? Because here, within the story of the earrings that were lost, there was the shomer refused to pay, and the mafkid had recourse to sue him in a court of law, and therefore in such a case where he has all the hassles of the court fees, etc., he's not going to be willing and eager to be makna the pikadon to the shomer. And therefore, if the pikadon, in this case the earrings, went up in value, then that increase in value belongs to the mafkin, to the original owner of the earrings, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to return the earrings to its rightful owner, and the troklin to its rightful owner. So basically, what Rava says is that there's a clear-cut distinction between the Mishnah and this case. In Rav Nachman's case, the shomer had to get Beis Din involved in order to force him, the shomer, to pay up, and therefore the mafkid is not eager to be makne, and the shomer did not acquire ownership on the pikadon. Moses points out that l'chora, there's a stira on a superficial level, at least, back to the Gemara on Lamed Dalet, just one daf before. Rav Zeres said that the hakna of kefal does not include the increase. The shomer does not get the vlados and the shearings, the izos. And here the Gemara assumes that the shomer should collect the increase and the appreciation of the market value of the earrings of the nizamim. But the answer is that if you remember the Gemara, back on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, made a distinction between shvacha d'yasa mi'alma and shvacha d'gufa. Shvacha d'yasa mi'alma, that's something that the mafkid would be makne to the shomer. But shvacha de gufa, like gizos and vlados, that's inherent in the animal, it comes from the goof of the animal, that it wasn't makna. So here, the nizamim went up in value, that's equivalent to knas of kefel. It's called and defined shvacha de yasa mi'alma, and of it inish the makna, and therefore the premise here of this sugya is that the mafkid would be makna all that shevach to the shomer. This leads us directly into the sugya of Shuma Hodar. L'meimra d'savar Rav Nachman d'Shuma Hodar. You remember that Rav Nachman's horah, his psak was that the traklin has to go back to its original owner, in this case to the shomer. Let's just see what Shuma Hodar means. Karka sheherichu es shavya. They evaluated, they estimated its market price, v'natlua me'odam, and they confiscated from a person, shechayev mam l'chaver, who owes money, in order, in lieu of a payment of that obligation, that debt, hodar, chozeresi elov im torach v'hisig mamon, ubalif dosa. Again, after Beis Din made this haracha, this estimation, the shuma evaluation, now they transferred the money in lieu of the chov from the mischayev to the person who's collecting the chov. Now hodar, which means now the person whose karka was confiscated in lieu of this chov, went ahead and he got funds, he achieved and attained some liquid assets. Now he wants to redeem that karka, which was passed on to the malva, and that's called shuma chozer. That's what we see by Rav Huna, by Rav Nachman. Excuse me, that Rav Nachman says, "Let's give back, return the traklin to its bailim, to its original owners, in lieu of the fact that now the payment was made. And the Gemara says that Shani Hossam, the case of Rav Nachman is Shuma Bito Savi, why? To Kahave Kife Meikara. The Nizamim were not really lost. They were temporarily misplaced. And now the Shomer is actually Potur. We sort of exonerate him retroactively, and therefore, had Bezdin known where to locate these Nizamim, these earrings, then for sure they never would have taken the Troklin to begin with. So in a sense, there was a toast, there was a mistake built into the very collection of that mansion, of that Troklin in lieu of a Chov which didn't really exist, and therefore we return it to the Shomer. That's not the case of someone who doesn't have any funds to pay up a chov, and therefore we collect and confiscate his nechasim after we make an appreciation, an evaluation of the value of those nechasim, then it's quite possible that Rav Nachman would agree that in such a case, even if the person who is chayev achieves liquid assets, he doesn't have the right to redeem his property and be poda his nechasim by being porei the chov, because once Bezin made the shuma, that's an irreversible situation. It's like an absolute sale without any conditions or limitations, and a mechira gemura ein a chozeres. That's what the Gemara is now arguing. Amri Nardoi, shuma hoder ad treisar yarchishata, v'yomar ha-meymar anomi nardoi, nani svirli shuma hodali olam v'hilchasa, Shuma hadar li olam mishum shenemar v'yasisa hayashar v'hatov. So Mir Tzashem, B'li Neder, in the next shia here on the bottom of Daf Lamed Hayim and Aleph, we'll try to complete this sugi of Shuma hadar, the various possibilities, 12 months, Shuma eina hoder, Shuma hadar li olam, v'yasisa v'yashar tov. That's going to be B'li Neder, the subject of our next shia.